of the game. If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker? We kill the flame. Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified.
Quick homage to wonderful man in person. This is Swan, and you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. In the studio today, I have Susan and Charlie joining us again for the third time, I think, for both of you. You came alone once, and you came with Elia once.
Yeah, that's right.
It's third.
Yeah, so welcome back. It's my third season, so we're doing pretty much a seasonal appearance at this point.
Nice.
That's fun. Welcome back. You guys just came back from a West Coast tour with Lusterlit. Yay, I said it right. Like you guys know, sometimes words don't come. So you made some new songs for that tour.
We did.
You did three shows, correct?
Mm-hmm.
When in...
Well, we did more than three shows.
Yeah, it's like eight shows.
Oh. Shows what I know.
Okay. We're all here to be informed.
So you did eight shows, and you're going to tell us about a couple of them and play them today. So that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And maybe also share some stories about that.
That's great.
It was great.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm planning to do something similar in the near future as well, right?
Right.
Maybe making it an annual thing, so... I was looking back over some photos, and there's a photo of a puppet. Do you want to tell the story of the puppet?
Sure. From the tour. Don Ralph is a performer, a brilliant songwriter. His band is Life in a Blender, and they are New York-based, and they've played in New York and toured for a long time. But Don moved to Seattle a few years ago, and now he does some music out there too, but he frequently travels back to New York to play with Life in a Blender and do other events in New York. So he's bi-coastal.
That's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, can be nice, can be a lot.
I know, it can be a lot, but he seems to enjoy it. So for him, I think a lot is fun. So he does creative stuff all over the place.
Brooklyn and Seattle seem to be kind of sister cities at the moment. I feel
really?
Like a lot of people are moving from one to the other, or similar to your friend Don, have like kind of
embraced
connections
both.
In both.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they come and that and Portland, I feel like, are the kind of right now the hubs
right.
of the coasts. It was just my personal observations from people that I know moving either to Seattle from here or just came from Seattle. And moved here.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
He played with us for the Portland Lit Crawl.
Mm-hmm.
And also at a show in West Seattle a couple days later.
And so I wasn't there. He incorporates a puppet in his set experience as a part of the music or as kind of a prop?
Well, he gives a little... The puppet character gives a little speech about... what you're wearing, what the rest of the audience is wearing.
Oh. So observational.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still a little...
Okay.
We're just like...
Okay.
Struggling. Oh, perfect. That actually sounds
okay,
better.
Good.
Yeah. So kind of comedic relief.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
So he does
brilliant.
Kind of... he does... little bits in between songs. His band intros... are legendary.
Yeah.
They really should be published somewhere. I mean, I tried to capture a bunch on video at one of the shows he played at Rockwood recently, but yeah, his band intros are amazing.
Nice.
It can't do it justice. I should have memorized some. Like some people memorize poetry. I should just memorize his band intros and to be able to recite those.
Good goal, yeah. I was memorizing poetry for a while there, and it was really nice. And then, like...
What happened, Swan, huh?
I just stopped memorizing things. And now, sometimes when I'm on the subway, I'll try and, like, recall something, and I'll just be like, It was there. It was there. Come back.
I know. That's what it was like trying to memorize the song lyrics for the new songs that we wrote and the old songs, too, because we hadn't really performed, you know, a full set before.
As a crew.
As a duo.
With you guys.
We did a couple times.
Right.
But it was not frequent enough for us to, you know, have everything in there at our recall, you know.
Yeah,
easily. So, but it was fun to get that.
But that's
the chance to focus on all of that, and then we would practice in the car.
Yeah.
Well, and wherever we were, just walking around, we'd practice our lyrics together. You know.
Yes, and we
were there, and then it got easier, and then because like
repetition.
Yeah, and that was a great feeling just to feel it get easier. Because initially, when it's uncomfortable and you're just learning something, my tendency is just to assume that I'm stupid. Like, well, I guess I must be really dumb because I'm like, what if I'm getting old? Because I can't do this. Oh my God, I can't do this. I must be getting old. And then I'm like, oh no, it's not. It was just I was learning something.
Yeah,
and I didn't know, and now I'm, you know, it's getting easier.
That's so funny. I know you talk about that a lot, and also talk about that willingness to fail or to write something that's the worst. But I appreciate that coming from you because I feel like you do have such a good presentation. Do you feel like, I guess, that jitteriness, that prep has gotten easier? Because I feel like you are consistently putting yourself in a situation where you have to write and perform something new.
Yes.
we both share that.
So
we talk about that a lot.
And for me, that like performance anxiety hasn't gone away. Mm-hmm. And always the night before, I'm just like on the verge of an anxiety attack, being like, why did I do this? What was I thinking? I can't do anything.
I go through that all the time.
Mental crisis. It doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't. Right. It fluctuates though. That's neat though. You know, it fluctuates.
Do you, this is maybe like an obvious question, but do you feel like it's consistently like the more you prepare, the less you have it, or is it irrelevant?
It sometimes helps, but not always.
Right.
You can
really
be really
vary.
Prepared and still, you know, you'll feel a level of nerves that kind of knocks you, you know, in a way that you weren't, you know, anticipating.
Well, for me, there's so many aspects to the performances because we're both playing and singing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And learning a new song and writing.
Yeah. Well, this mic,
and
you have to be right next to it.
It's still happening. I can't tell.
You sound perfect right now. It's just right close to it.
Like sometimes a song will go through a stage where it's really good the first couple times you play it, and then as I'm learning to integrate an instrumental thing at the same time as a vocal.
Like incorporate a new idea.
Then it kind of messes up a little bit for a show, and then I'm like, okay, now I know, and I have to straighten that aspect of it out. And so there can be fluctuations in how
just the single,
the arc of getting confident with a song happens, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me performing, it's like, it was nice to get a chance to perform almost nightly, and then after a while you get into a groove of that, and then you have less nerves. I find, you know, because you're just like used to that being an automatic part of what you're doing.
Basically, the more you do it, the better you get
there's
at it.
There's a thing for me that,
but with, then you can skip, and then
with book club, I often like to incorporate some like unusual instrument that I don't usually play.
Or you did a pop song for.
A rap song.
A rap song, yeah.
So like pushing yourself to do something that is not your strength.
Yeah.
And so when we play together for the book club shows, sometimes I'm so wrapped up in just trying to like pull the performance off, I don't feel like I'm like this, like looking over and connecting so much. I'm just like getting through
it done.
And it's over. And when it's over, I'm like, oh.
What happened?
I was just... and somewhere... Actually, for me, it was the Seattle show at, what was the place called again? The Tavern?
The Tavern.
Parliament Tavern.
Parliament Tavern.
That's a nice
Seattle.
Name.
I just felt really...
It's for royalty.
And you guys were guests of honor.
It was a really great show, and they had their own crowd, and they were really receptive, and Don's band played, and
that was
great.
Amazing. It was so fun.
I just felt really open at that show, and we... We're looking at each other and playing, and I don't know, that was a really, for me, that was like a
you felt like in
I've been
sync
looking for in my performance, and I felt like, oh, I'm there now, I'm not like so, you know, focused
like
downwards.
Internal.
I was like, oh, I don't know.
It felt, oh, it speaks to the down up that we were talking about the last time we saw each other, like bottom to top.
Wow, versus, I didn't even think of that.
You didn't realize that you had that a moment.
I had a bottom up experience.
So for listeners, I've been mulling over this since you told me. Do you want to talk a little bit about this concept you've been?
Oh, right. So, well, I don't remember how we got onto this.
I know it was kind of arranged.
Something about like
Brian Eno,
yeah,
spirituality or something.
And we were talking about
But well, you were actually talking about. I guess we're talking about Christian religion or something about there being a.
If you leave that, there's a void, and it's hard to know what.
Right.
To put in its place.
And
food.
And that there's a tendency to think of the deity as being this thing that comes down into you or is a controlling aspect of the world or something.
Yeah, top down.
And
essentially.
There's a scientific principle called emergent complexity or emergence that it's just an ordering principle, but it kind of works as a idea for spirituality and other things for me anyway.
And I mean, but for me as a creative tool, because spirituality or like that connection is also so closely entwined with the creative process.
Yeah. And yeah. And the
it is sometimes.
So the idea being that things are organized from the bottom up and it, even if it has the illusion of a top down organization. Mm-hmm. And they use, for example, a flock of birds or a school of fish all moving together.
Mm-hmm.
That each of those individual things, while it looks like there's something leading that shape and forming it, it's actually created by a series of individuals making decisions, like fly forward, don't fly into the next bird. Avoid being eaten by prey.
Well, those sound like my rules for driving. I have rules for driving, the number one is everybody lives.
That's a great number one rule. Yeah.
And the second one is don't hit anything. And the third one is if there's something in front of you, get around it.
And what's interesting with that is that I've read, you know, they're making the self-driving cars, and they're trying to incorporate rules like that into the self-driving
rule number one,
cars.
Everybody lives. That
situational reactivity.
That into the car.
No one dies.
But they don't know how to do that. If like, what if the car is heading towards a pedestrian?
It has
who
to make
lives,
moral
how
decisions.
Does the car have
to
make a moral decision. It's like, it's really weird.
Well, he has
hit the
to
bus,
stop.
Hit the person,
you know,
hit
he
the
has to
like,
stop. So, it's these, so everybody lives. Duh.
These theoretical problems. I don't know the specifics because my recall sometimes doesn't support me. But essentially, okay, so there's always scenarios where you have to choose. So how do you get the smart car to choose between, okay, I'm going to hit this mother with a child or I'm going to like swerve in, like you're just in a situation, ideally with self-propelled, like cars that can like be aware of each other, that wouldn't actually happen, but you have to consider the possibility. And so how do you, you know, program in that structure, like, okay, default
well,
to
sure
this thing.
I'm sure they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
You have to figure
but
it out.
But what a problem. I'm glad I'm not on the team of people trying to
anyway,
work.
Bottom up, decision making. If you have a decision to make, make sure you choose for the everybody lives.
Everybody lives.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. So, but that informed, like, your performance that night.
I think it did, actually. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess in performing, I look for that feeling of being carried sort of by the music and by the connection and not being like, I'm trying to just hold this thing together with...
Yeah,
with,
just to get through
remember
it.
Remember everything.
Yeah.
No, no, no. I just want it to be like, the song is playing and I'm participating in the... In the expression
I think you're
of the song.
Possibly thinking to one of the biggest challenges of being a performer is getting out of your own head, but having everything down so that you can
exactly.
do that.
Uh-huh. Totally.
And we did
necessary.
A lot of practicing, you know, it's like, you know, and it, because there's structure within our songs and it's nice to have the structure in place so that within that you can have a lot of freedom and express things and, you know.
Yeah,
and be emotional and stuff.
Yeah,
and touring gives us that opportunity because we just keep practicing, and then oh, there's another show coming right up. It's not like oh, we have to wait a month to play.
Yeah. No, I think that has an impact. I've noticed, like when I did a back to back, I felt like the chaos was more manageable. Well, let me switch gears into a song. You guys were talking before the show about a couple songs you wanted to play. Was one of those the Poe-inspired song?
Well,
perfect.
I'm ready with the tuning for ceremony.
Oh, okay, let's do that
okay.
One first.
Introduce that one first. Is there a story?
Yeah, that one was written for Bushwick Book Club Seattle's show, inspired by Blood Meridian, Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian, and that was our first time joining Bushwick Book Club Seattle for a show. Jeff Larson has been running that chapter of Bushwick Book Club for, gosh, a long time now, 5 years or so. And they do all kinds of great work out there. And they have really terrific songwriters out there who participate regularly. And, of course, you know, ones that keep, you know, joining in, whoever Jeff recruits for the shows. And the songwriters we met for that night were just really great. It was neat to, you know, see what they were outputting, you know. They're just really great, creative.
So
cool.
I do recall having a conversation about how costuming was a little bit different priorities, but the music, how was, did you notice kind of from your experiences in Brooklyn with musicians and with those musicians that night, like, was there anything you noticed that was different between?
I just noticed that they took a lot of care with what they did. You know, we do too. They were great, you know.
Yeah.
It was
Everyone brought a thing.
Yeah, everyone brought a new thing that they made.
Yay.
It was really terrific.
And it's the story was kind of an interesting challenge as a writer, because it was it was a very cinematic book, and the characters themselves were sort of part of the, I don't know how to describe, part of the landscape in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And to get inside their heads, it was you had to really think of an imaginative way to do it, and it was cool to see how everybody approached that challenge.
There was one guy who used his banjo as a prop, you know, as well as a musical instrument. Remember when he used his banjo like a rifle?
Like a rifle, yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So it got performance already as well at certain points. It was very nice.
Great.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
That was a great moment.
Yeah, he was really inspired.
And we get to hear it?
Yeah.
Perfect.
This takes phrases of the book, within the book, and uses it in the song.
Phrases, direct quotes from the book?
Yeah, some direct quotes.
Nice.
And some altered.
Do you need help setting up? We're good? Perfect.
I'll try to play quietly.
Yeah.
Okay. Stars are falling from the beginnings of night. Destiny's in dust and nothingness on the way to death. Stars were falling when you were born that night. The Leonids, a massacre of fight in the sky. Destiny's in dust on the way to death. Everyone came to dance. The straight and winding are one. Your soul may be required of thee. Drink up, drink up.
to dance. The straight and winding a one. The dance is complete, even if you don't know why you've come. The desert that breaks you, so vast that it calls for one thing to fill it. You pour in your heart, fill up the vessel with largeness of heart, fill up the tumbler. Drink up the desert that breaks you, so fast that it calls for the one thing to fill it, your largeness of heart. Everyone came to dance. Straight and winding a one. Your soul may be required of thee. Drink up. Everyone came to dance. Straight and winding a one. The dance is complete, even if you don't know why you've come. Ceremony, ceremony, ceremony,
nothing like a Blood Meridian inspired dirge to get you going in the morning.
I know, I was just thinking we're recording this at a very early relative 10:30.
Half a cup of coffee in you.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I was thinking as you were playing that I was impressed you guys were awake enough to do that. So thank you for.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Sure, that's easy. Talking's the hard part.
Yeah.
Right, Charlie?
Exactly.
Oh, and just play more songs for the rest of possibly get some more coffee.
I'm going to drink it like a cowboy. It's black.
Oh. I went to this comedy music show in Wyoming that was a bunch of cowboys. They actually worked on a ranch and then also did this show to
make so
money.
Cool.
But
I want to be a cowboy.
I know. It like kind horses. Of woke something up in me. I was like, oh, a different life. But he would make coffee for the entire like audience.
Wow.
And he would tell his secret of he would just put the grounds in a sock and boil the sock of grounds in this giant pot.
Ah.
And then he's like, cowboy coffee. And he's like, so many people compliment it. And it's coffee grounds in a sock.
Nice.
Secret cowboy coffee. So now you know if okay. you want to channel.
We saw horses.
I have socks.
We saw elk.
You saw elk.
Yeah,
elk are crazy. I walked into an elk once. My dad was a
Right into an elk.
Right into an elk. My dad was a hunter. I think I don't know if I've told this story on air. My dad was a hunter, and once I walked into our garage and literally elk hanging there, and I was like, wah!
Oh my God.
Like blood on my shirt. Yeah, my dad had skinned it, and then it was hanging in our cold garage so that it didn't spoil. Yeah.
And that was like it probably affected the rest of your life.
It's, you know,
a traumatic early bloody elk experience.
Because I thought he was gone too, because he had just left on this week long trip and apparently got an elk.
This sounds like a scene in a movie.
Got
right?
an elk the second day. For me, it was a scene from a book. I was reading a book called.
Are you reading Carrie?
No. less horror, more comedy. It's called Furiously. No, it's not called Furiously Happy. It's called Let's Pretend This Never Happened by Jenny Law. Lawson, and she wrote the book based on a blog that was like her current and recollection of her life, and told a story of walking into a deer. And I was reading this just like, no
Holy
way
shit.
No wow. way
<That's>
we both
hilarious.
Did this, are you me?
Awesome.
Just, but I really appreciate her. I don't know if you guys have opinions or experiences with people who struggle with mental illness, but she, you know, talks very humorously but also very real, like this is what it's like to live with a mental illness. I feel like it gives voice to the people who have social anxiety. You're like, yeah, that's what
yeah,
it's like.
It's
like that's what it feels like when I'm in a crowd of people and I just like freeze up and like people don't understand, but I'm sitting here like, oh, something terrible is gonna happen.
That
there's
was a
too
great
many people
noise that you just made. That's what it sounds like inside
my heart. Yeah, it's just like this like I'm petrified in certain moments and I have to like breathe and calm down, and I'm thinking I'm crazy because everyone else seems very comfortable. Happens on the subway sometimes where I'm like, oh my God, this is so scary for some reason.
That is so not funny, but I can relate.
I don't have like a full-blown diagnosed mental illness, but I do think I read about it a lot, and I do think that it's something we don't understand, but that
I have, like, I do my best to try to be as comfortable as I can with my uncomfortableness.
Yeah.
And then lately I've had to, like, step it up a level. And my new level of this is, like, I'll just hear the thoughts in my head that are, you know, paranoid or I don't know, just, you know, insulting, and then I'll just be like, well, you know, that's probably not true. That's what I'll say. I'll be, and that, you know, and that's how I'm getting through life these days.
Yeah,
like,
you just
have
these, to...
like, terrible thoughts. I'm like, oh, that's probably not true. Okay, I'll, you know, allow myself to have them.
Give. Well, and maybe then, even just like open up the possibility of your mind.
Yeah,
and like
maybe
helps
I'm
you process.
Maybe that person doesn't hate me that much. You know,
oh my
I just
gosh.
Did this today. I was saying to Charlie that we should have a Lester Litt cartoon, and one of the panels should be called Storm Paranoia, because we have a mutual friend, Storm Gardner. She's just amazing, you know.
Yeah.
But we both go through these phases where we're like, Storm hates me. I think Storm really hates me. You know, I mean, I think she might really not like me anymore. I mean, it might not even be neutral. It could be actual dislike. And then we'll have to like express the storm paranoia to each other, and then we'll each have to reassure each other.
It's possible.
Yeah.
That's not
so this morning I was doing that, you know, with Charlie, and Charlie, you know, obliged me and said, no, I think, you know, I think it's fine. I think she actually really does like you.
I agree with Charlie.
And sometimes when Charlie's not there, you have to do it for yourself.
Yeah,
you know
I love that. Like, so it speaks to two of my coping mechanisms.
Uh-huh.
The first is a mantra.
Uh-huh.
I just tell myself, I don't always have to be comfortable. I don't always have to be comfortable. As many times as it takes for me to be like, I'm uncomfortable,
that's
and that's okay.
Thank you.
And my second,
I really appreciate that.
My second coping mechanism is my friend James, actually. You guys both met him, tall, lanky, bum chic guy. But I have his voice coming into my head being like, people like you, people are your friends.
Oh, isn't that
like
nice?
It was just like I
that's
but
nice.
You know him reassuring me that there are people who love me, and that a lot, you know, most people that meet me like me, and you know, so when I'm having these moments
it's
of
true.
Like,
he's right.
I met all these Swan. People and everyone hated me. And he has to be like, Swan, people like you.
Yeah.
And if they don't,
oh,
that's fine
so nice.
Too.
That's really good.
More
yeah.
judgment on
yeah,
them
yeah,
than
yeah.
on your value.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I'm trying to do that for myself more. You
it's
know,
hard.
It's not easy to let yourself off the hook.
Self-compassion and recognizing that you're always going to be 1,000 times more critical than anyone else.
Yeah.
Just
most people don't even care
by
at all.
Default of being in your
know.
Own head.
And that's the thing.
Or they're too much in their
yeah,
head.
Yeah, they don't even
yeah, exactly.
they didn't register you even.
I often assume that when I don't hear from somebody or something like that,
they didn't respond.
I've offended them. I've done
yeah,
something.
What did I do?
And I know, and I trace back over all the interactions, and I pinpoint
yeah,
the thing.
So analytical
really
and be
sure
like,
what? I'm sure that I offended them right there.
That's the thing.
And
that's the moment.
Thing
and then you see him again,
later,
and it's
almost
like.
Almost invariably, it's like they're like, I didn't even read that email. I'm just like, oh, okay.
The challenges of being in a community, which is one of my talking points, because by default of having, you know, hosting events, you're building a community and you're also collaborating with a lot of musicians.
Yeah,
and so I feel like that's something you have either are good at or have become good at. Do you want to talk about like the community building aspects of you and your
yeah,
music?
Yeah, it's very natural. It's because that's one of the most pleasurable parts about doing music is that you get to do it with people. And I call it being in music with people. I love being in music with like all these talented creative people I get to be with. I don't know, it's intimate, you know, you're sharing a lot, you're connected. I shot a Tylenol commercial recently where they had me talking about music, and they didn't use this quote, but I thought it was the funniest thing I said that morning. I said, well, it's as intimate as you can be with someone with your clothes on.
Yes.
You know, and they didn't
and you
use
heard
that,
it here.
But, you know, I thought it was true.
No.
Was like, but yeah, it's about as yeah close to some, as you can get with
you
someone.
You bear parts of
you
your
know,
soul
yeah,
to each other.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's,
everyone
it's
sees
thrilling.
And
it's
validates,
thrilling.
Hopefully.
It's really thrilling.
Well, I mean, that's what the...
No one boos.
really...
Sometimes help. We boo.
I mean,
just kidding.
When I discovered the Bushwick Book Club and started playing in it and understanding how Susan really, how all these people drew around Susan and how she, you know, she, whenever I say this, she's like, I just send out emails.
It's true. I just write a lot of somebody has to write the frickin' emails.
Yeah. I feel like so much
true.
That's my impediment. I don't.
But, it's still, there's that desire, because a lot of musicians are also very introverted.
Yeah.
And it's...
I'm raising my hand again.
Yeah.
And it's very natural to kind of settle into that mode.
Yeah.
But,
and writing is solitary, and so...
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which can be also thrilling, because you get to explore, you know, all kinds of stuff in yourself
yeah.
and in your head. But then when you get to share it and be with people, what's better than that?
Yeah.
See,
we have the best life, Charlie. We have the best life.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
A really great medium, you know, within which to work and be ourselves and express ourselves and then share it with other people. Oh, God, this is really the best.
Yep.
Okay, the end. Bye.
The end. Thanks for coming. That
thanks,
was
fun.
So that's pretty much the gist of it is being an introvert and working in solitude to create something and then
uh-huh.
pushing yourself out into a community
and, yeah,
to,
and to share it.
Share
and,
it like, and hear the works of others.
Yeah.
So often
create
I'm
with
so
them,
inspired.
And you get inspired by each other.
By what stood out to them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool.
So a couple of things. Radio Free Brooklyn and... is always looking for more support. So if you want to join the community and support us financially, especially, you know, in these chaotic times, chaos referring to a lot happening change-wise, radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. I also was going to just mention that we have a live show coming on after us, so I wanted to give like a 15-minute-ish warning. I'll keep you guys posted on that, but... just letting you know we're probably
okay.
going to have a little bit shorter
right.
show, and then I'll
that's
add
totally
like
fine.
A poem or something to it later. One more thing I was going to say, but I'm losing it. I lost it.
Okay.
Never mind.
It'll come back.
This is Ink and Worm. Thanks for listening.
Yes, Ink and Worm.
Check us out on all the socials.
Awesome.
I'm there.
But the community is growing too, and now it includes, you know, Seattle and LA, where Stacey Rock runs Bushwick Book Club LA. We just started Bushwick Book Club Portland, mm-hmm. you know, for the Lit Crawl event that they had there. And we did our first show. And it was so thrilling to meet all these Portland musicians who had created new songs inspired by Zinester's Guide to Portland. Uh-huh. And we're planning on doing more shows there. With another radio show host, Amy Ooh. Faust, who has a morning radio show there.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was terrific. She wrote a song.
It was a great song.
She co-hosted the show. It was really fun.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just the musicians we met out there, Mike Danner and Ralph Carney and, oh, my God,
it's
so many great.
Music town.
Yeah,
well,
just beautiful people.
I have a question for you, Susan, and maybe for you, Charlie, too, because I guess a change of instruments. The first time I met you, you were playing an accordion.
Uh-huh.
And I've noticed, I would say most of the performances I've seen since then have been with you drumming.
Yeah.
Is this like you go through phases of instruments or
sure.
just like personal?
Yeah, I've had this drum forever. And I played it sometimes with different groups like Ching Chong Song. But I like drumming in general, but I just started to play it more within the last couple of years. Part of it was health related because I have a lower back condition and sciatica related to that lower back condition. This drum is lighter than the accordion. The accordion's just full of metal, you know. It's like playing furniture, I always say. And
that's good.
Yeah, and nobody wants to carry around furniture all day, you know. So I started playing this drum even more, partly because of that, but also because it's really just fun to hit something.
Yeah.
I think it's very good for a girl to hit something.
I like
it's very
that.
Healthy.
Yeah. Every girl needs a drum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or karate class? I don't know.
Maybe both. Why choose?
Why choose? Hey. Yeah. You can have it all. I had Marilyn Rondon, who was a boxer, come on the show talk about her book.
I love writing about boxing.
Yeah, she wrote a book called Why Does Mommy Have Tattoos? Talking about tattoo culture and assumptions people make because she's very heavily tattooed.
Maybe we should do that book for January. That one and maybe
it's
the
a children's book.
Oh, Joyce, that's cool.
I'll take everyone a minute to read, so that's kind of fun.
Cool. Yeah.
One of the best parts of children's books. They're really, you can fit them into your schedule really easily.
All right, good to know.
I've read a lot of good books lately. I've had a good wave. But anyway, so I was personally hoping to hear the song you guys wrote from a short story by Edgar Allan Poe.
Cask of Amontillado.
But I don't want to introduce it.
Let's introduce it.
Okay, so you're telling me a little bit about the story, Cask of...
Yeah.
Of what is
Amontillado.
It?
Amontillado. Amontillado is it's kind of like sherry, but it's not sherry, and it's rare. And so you can... It's sort of like a... When you buy drugs on the street, not that I've ever done that.
I've never done that.
No, never. when you buy drugs on the street and they're like, oh, yeah, this is like a certain kind of acid or this is a certain kind of, and you don't really know
they,
what
like,
it is.
They like tell you about it and you're like,
yeah,
and you're but like, is it drugs?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah.
And then they're like, oh, it's baking powder. You know, like that, you know. So it can be like that. So this guy, he tells his quote, good friend that I have this cask of Amontillado, but I don't really know if it is, but you know who'd be able to tell? You, because of your, you know, refined taste in wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd know if it was Amontillado. Come on down. And meanwhile, he lures him into the catacombs and kills him. Lays bricks.
And this is,
kill him. He was such a doer.
He was also in costume because it was a festival.
Yeah,
so he was dressed as a clown.
Yeah,
and
dressed
then
as a jester.
This quote-unquote...
Dressed as a jester. Anyway, good.
Dressed as a jester.
Uh-huh.
Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah.
but you were also saying that, so this quote-unquote friend was someone who had been mean to the main character.
Yeah,
consistently,
right.
Every day for his whole life.
Every day for his whole life.
And the main character was
things.
Always like, you're so funny.
Exactly.
And then...
And then killed him.
Built up enough resentment, I guess.
Yeah, that's what happens when you don't express your feelings.
You have to express your feelings.
Like this guy needed,
or
a book club
will
or something.
Bury you dressed as a jester.
No, or he will bury somebody.
Thank you. I was like, wait, this is the wrong moral.
Don't bury your feelings. Or your friends.
Right. Don't bury your friends. Rule number one,
everybody lives. Duh. I don't know why that's so hard for people to follow. Jesus Christ.
And everybody drinks.
Yeah. And
yeah. and drink it whether it's Amontillado or not, you know.
What's the name of the song?
This is called Cask of Amontillado.
Yes.
I'm going to try to remember words, but I'm probably going to mess up. All right. My dear Fortunato, we are luckily met. How remarkably well you are looking today. My dear Fortunato, let's go down to the vault. There are 1,000 injuries for which you have to pay. I paid full price without thinking twice on what passes as a pipe of amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Oh, oh, oh. I have my doubts, but you should check it out. You know what it's about, and tell me if it's amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Oh, oh, oh. 'Cause that Lucchese, he can't tell amontillado from sherry, and there's no one to help. They've all absconded to make merry. Your taste in wine is famous, and as for that Lucchese, he is an ignoramus. My dear Fortunato, you are luckily met. How remarkably well you are looking today. My dear Fortunato, let's go down to the vaults. There are 1,000 injuries for which you have to pay. I paid full price without thinking twice on what passes as a pipe of amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Oh, oh, oh. I got my doubts, but you should check it out. You know what it's about. Tell me if it's amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Oh, oh, oh. 'Cause that Lucchese, he can't tell amontillado from sherry, and there's no one to help. They've all absconded to make merry. Your taste in wine is famous, and as for that Lucchese, he is an ignoramus. Shake your chains, shake your chains, ring those bells. I smile at the thought of the wine in hell. Shake your chains, ring those bells. I smile at the thought of the wine in hell. 'Cause you ain't dying of that cough. Not today, not tomorrow, it's not soon enough. Let's drink to the buried and to imaginary amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Oh, oh, oh. It's an eternity of a cheap Merlot wine product or some chalky Cabernet on the sweet side. Enjoy, I heard. It's an eternity of a Boone's County Manischewitz, Thunderbird, Mad Dog, Night Train, Headache. Enjoy. I smile at the thought of the wine in hell. I shake your chains, ring those bells. I smile at the thought of the wine in hell. I shake your chains, ring those bells. 'Cause you ain't dying of that cough. And not today, not tomorrow, it's not soon enough. Let's drink to the buried and to imaginary amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Amontillado. Oh, 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 amontillado. Oh, oh. Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And the story, and also how groovy. It's so dark and groovy.
Thanks.
Wonderful.
Makes you want to go down to the catacombs.
I think I would. I've never done anything like that. I used to walk through graveyards, and I thought that was like eerie, but not uncomfortable. But I think catacombs might make me uncomfortable.
Right.
And I just have to say my mantra.
Exactly.
We shot a commercial for one of our
shows, our record release
in the graveyard. In the Evergreen Graveyard.
Mm. Yeah, we met the graveyard historian, too. Yeah.
The really CD fun. Release you guys are recording now. Any details about that you want to throw out?
They're all new Lester Litt songs.
Yeah.
And
it's going to include this one.
In Time for Christmas?
Yeah. No, probably not in Time for Christmas. Maybe, I don't know.
It's possible.
Probably not in Time for Christmas.
All right.
we'll be working on
push.
It.
We'll be working on
it. It'll be a New Year's present to start your 2017 outright.
Yes. Totes.
Great. So let's end with a couple questions. My first is, do you have any comfort food music that you turn to when you're like feeling a little lackluster.
Comfort food music. What a great term.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Charlie, do you want to answer first?
It varies. It depends. Sometimes it's classical music, and it's like Debussy or Aaron Copland.
Okay.
yeah. That's a great, it's just a great question.
Yeah, I've heard a classical quite a bit lately. Chopin has been my...
Chopin. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, this has been my...
I didn't mean to correct you.
No, please correct me. Otherwise, I just go around being wrong.
No, I love Chopin too. I grew up playing, a little bit of classical music, and so I remember enjoying playing those pieces. But sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
You're okay. Do you have any comfort food music?
I was just remembering the name, Susana Baca. She's a Peruvian, Afro-Peruvian singer. She's just amazing. But she has like this one album that I listened to forever, and I just love all the songs and like the warmth from that music, and like that really gets me through. And also Johnny Cash, and
nice.
And I love Aretha and old Tina Turner, and blues. So Muddy Waters, when I just need a good hit of the blues.
Yeah,
Otis Redding too.
Oh.
But yeah, Muddy Waters, holy shit.
I'm actually going
to
wrap up.
I should just go home and listen to it right now. Thanks, Juan.
Yeah. So enjoy your comfort music.
Thanks.
Enjoy your holiday season coming up. Let's all be nice to each other.
Yay!
Thank you guys, Susan, Charlie, for being here.
Thanks, Juan.
I include links. You are listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. And I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Pulchritude.
Sorry. That was just said to me this week. 20 racks of table come from Ebony. Cut that ivory into skinny pieces. Then she clean up with her face, but I love my babe. You talking money, need a hearing aid. You talking about me, I don't see a shade. Switch on my side, I like to get it late. Switch on my core if I kill any pain. Look what you got. I'm a motherfucking star boy. Look what you got. I'm a motherfucking star boy. Every day a nigga try to test me. Every day a nigga try to end me. Pull off in that roadster SV. Pockets overweight and hefty. Coming for the king, that's a far cry. I come alive in the fall time. The competition, I don't really listen. I'm in the blue moon song, I'm a new edition.
Hey guys, here's some more music from Susan and Charlie. We have a lot of great stuff coming up for you with Ink and Worm, and also with the Bushwick Book Club and other shows that Charlie and Susan are doing. You can find links to everything in the show notes.
Gobblers, he'll light the fire to hear us scream. He won't explain noodly squat to us. He wants telegraphic messages on everything. It's not anything they teach you in church. Sometimes I wonder about the creator of the universe. Prostitutes surrender to their pimps like they're surrendering to Jesus. Suicide, death, murder, insanity, or worse. Sometimes I wonder about the creator of the universe.
la 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 la